This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yet another assassination attempt. We will discuss it. Why does this keep happening? Why will it continue to happen? How can we stop it? We'll talk about that. Lydia Moynihan was actually in the building. We'll get the who, what, when, where, and why. Scott Pressler, Republican primaries, Julio Rosas, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. We are going to move into being a culture of assassination. The ground is already prepped. The ground is prepped. The people have been conditioned. We now are going to be a country where political leaders, this is not going to be isolated to Trump, they are going to live in fear for their lives. Okay. First of all, let me express my sympathies. I know I'm a jerk. I don't pretend to be otherwise, but I do feel genuine sorrow for you and for me, to be honest with you, for myself, about this current environment we live in and the environment we're going to stay in for the foreseeable future. I know you don't want to live in this kind of a country where there's an assassination attempt every other day. We're watching communists kill our people all the time. I know that this is not what you want. I know you just want to live in peace. And that's what I want too. I just want to live in peace. But what we're going to do here for a few minutes before we talk to people who were at that correspondence dinner and things like that, what we're going to do here is we're going to discuss some whys. Why have we been talking about this, a culture of assassination, for years? That was 2 years ago I said that. Why? Why are they doing this? What is the goal? Why is this stuff going to keep happening? And how can we stop it? So let's dig into it. First of all, please know that language leads to mindset, and mindset leads to performance in all walks of life, in all ways of life. Language leads to mindset. Mindset leads to performance. If you are a business leader, a boss, a manager of some kind, the language you use around your employees, it will affect the direction of the company. It will affect their performance. If every single day you walk in and say, man, we're so blessed to be here. What a great company. Let's get things done today. You're going to have more productivity, better people. And if you go in there every day and you're complaining, this sucks, the boss sucks, everything sucks, I can't wait to get off work today, the productivity will go down. Language leads to mindset. Mindset leads to performance. This applies to parents with their children, coaches, you name it. But it also applies to political parties, political coalitions, political movements. Language leads to mindset. Mindset leads to performance. Why are there so many violent communists in this country willing to die, get sent to prison? That nutball who just tried to kill Trump and a bunch of people, he's going to prison for probably the rest of his life. If he does get out of prison, he'll be an ancient, wrinkled up old man. What? I mean, I understand he's not 15, but he's still a relatively young guy with great years ahead of him. Your vacation, you get yourself a girlfriend. Probably not him, but you understand what I mean. A cheeseburger on the beach somewhere. All this stuff is ahead of you in life, and now you're in lockup. Why? Why are there so many of these people willing to do this? Well, the language of the Democrat Party, which is the Communist Party, the language of the Communist Party in the United States of America is very, very purposeful. They talk the way they talk. They use the words they use because they want this kind of performance. This is why they all talk like this.
What is the greatest national security threat to the United States? It's Donald Trump.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
Donald Trump cannot be president again. He's an existential threat to democracy.
Look, are they a threat to democracy? Yes. Are they going to take our rights away? Yes. Are they going to put people's lives in danger? Yes.
We have to defeat a person who is a threat to our democracy of the kind that we have not seen.
Trump is an enemy of the United States.
Having Trump not only have had the codes, but now having the classified information for Americans and being able to put that out and share it in his resort with anyone and everyone who comes through should be terrifying to all Americans, mm-hmm. and he needs to be shot, stopped.
MAGA in general, they are threats to us domestically.
He is destructive to our democracy, and he has to be eliminated.
Right? The miserable, oftentimes drug-addled, mentally weak communist street animals hear that rhetoric over and over and over and over again. It doesn't take a genius to figure out eventually those words are going to land on someone who will act on the rhetoric. Maybe you read in the manifesto. If you didn't, the guy wrote this stupid manifesto. One of the things he put in there is, I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. Okay, what pedophile? What's he talking about? Donald Trump has never, ever been credibly accused of anything like that at all by anybody. Where would he get that idea?
President of the United States is a rapist.
We will not let a racist, rapist, fascist ruin the future that is ours.
The guy is a convicted felon or convicted rapist. He's a pedophile. He's the worst human being in the world. If we're relying on this guy's morality for the most powerful country in the world, then we're all in a lot of trouble.
There's highly disturbing allegations of Donald Trump raping children, of Donald Trump threatening to kill children.
Your liberal Aunt Peggy, who lives in a bubble and hears those words, she simply believes those words. And that street animal who just tried to commit mass murder, he heard those words, he believed those words, and he chose to act on those words. Now let's get to the response, the communist response after these things happen. They assassinate Charlie Kirk, they shoot Trump in the head, they try to kill him another time, this communist assassin, Luigi, this one, communist act of violence, communist act of violence, communist act of violence. And there's never an I'm sorry, there's never a genuine ownership of it. I mean, you get things like this from Jimmy Kimmel and people say, what?
Our First Lady Melania is here. Look at Melania. So beautiful. Mrs. Trump, you have a glow like an expectant widow.
Okay. People are angry. I got it. But here's the part that we have to talk about. They're not sorry. That's why they're not saying sorry. Because they're not sorry. They don't want these things to stop. All you'll ever get out of the communists in the wake of these things is some version of, well, hey, everyone needs to tone it down, trying to spread responsibility out there. Or you'll get, well, I mean, look, he's kind of responsible for a lot of this. It's kind of his fault. Or you'll get also, well, I mean, kind of deserves it in the end. Or they'll just outright lie about the whole thing. It was staged or something like that. But what you're never, ever, ever going to get is, yeah, we've been using this language and we understand our street animal base, that they're violent and rabid and they're going to act on these things. And we're sorry about that and we're going to change. And the reason you're never going to get that is because they don't want the change. Now, why? Why in the world are they so violent? Do you see what libs of TikTok put up?
I'm missed again. Oh my god.
Oh, I'm already crying.
Imagine faking your own assassination attempt for the third time and then everybody's just upset that it wasn't real and that you didn't croak.
I wake up each morning hoping he has died. I go to bed each night hoping by the time I get up in the morning, he has died.
For the love of all things good,
they missed again? It's America. They missed again.
If somebody misses one more time, nobody wants to work these days. Nobody wants to get out there and work.
Why are they like this? Well, you have to understand what the communist is doing. He is fighting a revolution. It is in no way a political movement. It is a religious movement. It is a religion designed to destroy the entire system, everything. Everything from the family unit to the United States government itself and everything in between. They are fighting a revolution to burn it all down. And they have always believed, from the Soviets to the Cambodians to the East Germans to the Cubans to the, you name it, they have always believed that violence is a necessary part of the revolution. One of the first heads of the Soviet secret police, the Cheka, came out and said multiple times, you can go read his writings, quote, "We stand for organized terror." The reason Democrats keep using this language and then street animals keep acting on this language is because this is what they want to happen. The assassinations and attempted assassinations will not slow down. The rhetoric will not get toned down. This is not going to change at all, because they want people to die. They are inherently violent and demonic, and they want people to die. But I don't want you to think this is all doom and gloom. What does that mean for us? Where do we go from here? What do we do? Well, first of all, I want you to understand this critically important point. In part, the reason communists do this stuff is because they understand your desire and my desire to live in peace. I just want peace and quiet. I just want peace and quiet. I want things to calm down again. That is a human desire of good people. I know that's probably something you have in your heart. I understand that. Now, let me ask you something. Knowing that, have you ever heard a Democrat, I just saw another one, big Democrat strategist yesterday, say this after the shooting. You ever heard a Democrat say after one of these things, don't you miss it when we had Obama or Joe Biden and everything was just calm without the chaos? Why do you think you see that so often from Democrats, from communists in the United States of America? Well, when a Democrat gets elected, they turn off the street violence machine and make things seem quiet and calmer. As soon as any Republican, anyone on the right gets elected, they turn the violence machine back on, creating the chaos and the noise. So someone like you steps up and says, just make the noise stop. Fine, fine. Take power again. Just make all this stop so I can live in peace. That's why the communists say that in the wake of every evil thing they do. Hey, we can calm things down again. It's kind of like a mafia deal. We can calm things down again. Just sign on the dotted line. Give me all the power in the world. I'll stop hurting you. You can make this stop anytime you want. Would you like this to stop? Now, how do we actually make this stop? Because we're not going to reason with them. We're not going to point out their hypocrisy. We're not going to say to them ever at any time, it's your rhetoric, it's your rhetoric, it's your rhetoric. I mean, did you see what Jamie Raskin said? This is a perfect example. You see what he said when he was asked about it?
Yeah, and you have, and as many of your fellow Democrats, have used some heated rhetoric against the president. And do you think twice about that when something like this happens?
What rhetoric do you have in mind?
Talking about some of the fact that he, you know, is terrible for this country and so on and so forth. I understand that that's your Democratic right. But overall, do you
have no a responsibility? I have no personal problem with Donald Trump at all. I mean, I talk about the policies of this administration, the authoritarianism like we saw on display in Minneapolis.
What rhetoric? Authoritarianism. So let's get to this. Because we're going to talk to Lydia Moynihan in a second. She was actually there. We'll find out what went down. How do we actually make it stop? Since shame is not going to work. Pointing out their hypocrisy is not going to work. Whining to tone it down won't work. Well, arresting the street animals like this guy's, it's not nearly enough. What we have to do is we have to get to the root of their power, the root of what creates people like this, and that's their institutions. It is institutions, communist institutions in this country who are producing these violent communist animals. And until we start ripping those institutions out of our country by the roots, we will never solve the problem. What does this look like in practicality? Let me tell you this. You will understand we have a super legitimate anti-communist movement in the United States of America when university after university after university across this country doesn't reform, doesn't hire a new dean, starts firing every staff member, closing the doors, and turning the campus itself into a place for homeless veterans. Then you will understand we are finally going after their institutions. Until institutions like the university system are taken down, ripped out, this never stops. There's your solution. Do we have the courage to do so? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Maybe we should just get some chalk in our bodies, make things better. Give us the energy to do what must be done. You see, I personally take a male vitality stack from chalk every single day. I am so full of testosterone at this point in time, I'm ready to go to the universities myself. Just give me the sledgehammer, get everyone out of the building, I'll take care of the rest. Do you want to have that kind of energy? Do you want to feel great all the time? Go get a male vitality stack in your body, chok.com/JesseTV. Get a subscription, chok.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, it happened again. It'll keep happening. It's the kind of country we live in now. Joining me now, one of the heroes of the event, Lydia Moynihan, correspondent with the New York Post. Lydia, we'll get to your tales of heroism in just a moment. Before we get to that, can you lay out for those of us who are not invited to fancy parties like this, what was the actual security situation like? Because I mean, all people see are stupid headlines on the internet. I don't want internet rumors. I want to know what was there, what wasn't there. Were you actually in mortal danger? Please go ahead.
My cortisol levels would suggest that yes, I was in mortal danger. So to walk people through the security situation, essentially it's a two-tiered system. So the Washington Hilton, huge hotel there in Washington, D.C., the largest ballroom. And what happens is anybody essentially can enter the hotel. That's where there's a lot of parties. Fox News has a party, ABC, CBS, all of the networks have parties in various rooms there. And anyone who is a guest at the hotel, which you don't have to be vetted to be a guest, you just show up, you show your ID, you do need that, and check in. They don't check the luggage of anybody. So you could bring drugs, guns, bombs, unclear. And the other piece, so guests are obviously there, and then anyone who essentially flashes security an invite can go ahead. So typically there's protesters. This time they were protesting for Palestine. I'm not sure why we're still protesting about that, but I digress. Pro-Palestine protesters were around there, and so to get through a couple, you know, guys wearing suits, you show your phone, you say, here, I'm invited to the party, and they say, okay, go in. Presumably, if you looked a little shady, maybe they would pull you aside, I don't know. But that's the extent of the security to be in the Hilton at that point. So to be clear, I know there was a lot of fake news out there that there wasn't any security at the dinner. The dinner does have security. So once you are in the Hilton, if you are invited to the dinner, you go to the basement, essentially, which means you don't have great Wi-Fi, you don't have great service, and To enter, you have to have a physical ticket, which feels very anachronistic in a day and age like this. The ticket doesn't even have your name on it, so there's no ID checks. You flash your ticket, and then you do go through metal detectors. They check your bags, if you have any, and you are basically, it would not be possible to get a weapon or something like that into the dinner. Once you're in the dinner, you're sort of in a safe zone. But of course, the actual security checkpoint is, as you saw, like a couple yards away from the entrance. And essentially, there's no checkpoint until that point. So as we saw, it was easy for somebody like him to have a shotgun and rush through that moment. People didn't seem very prepared for something like that to happen. And so obviously he was caught, but I don't think it should ever have gotten to that point. And I obviously want to call out the brave men and women who in that moment rushed forward, made sure that the president was safe, put their lives on the line, but it never should have been a situation where that was possible. And I'm kind of reminded of this great Otto von Bismarck quote, "God has a special providence for fools, drunkards, and the United States of America." And I frankly feel like this keeps happening because there's a level of incompetence that we accept. I think maybe people still have an element of trust in humanity, but my first thought in that moment was, you know, if you remember, part of the reason they decided for why we attacked Iran when we did is that all of their top officials were meeting together in the same room at the same time, something that's very rare. That was secret intelligence that the US and Israel had. It was well-documented, well-reported, plastered all over the media that you were going to have Trump, Vance, Rubio, Bessent, every top official in the Hilton in one room. So my first thought is if a terrorist wanted to do something, they very easily could have. So I'm glad it worked out, but it seems like it was more providence than actual competence.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up about Iran, because I did, the question swirling around in my head, and I didn't have a clear picture of the security situation. Okay, some Caltech dork who probably couldn't even pump the action on that shotgun gets busted, doesn't do any damage, we got all that. If that's four guys, five guys with some level of training, you think they could have made entrance into that room?
100%. And that was what was scary as an attendee, is you have this level of trust. You can't live your life always terrified. So by the time you realize it's gunshots, you think, okay, for somebody to have breached as much as they did, surely this is somebody with a plan, with what, I don't know, somebody who knows what they're doing to have gotten that far. So that was my first thought as I was under a table. But absolutely. Look, I mean, I don't have intelligence like classifications. I don't have any special insight into this, but the fact that, again, one of a former colleague happened to be staying in the room next to Cole Allen, you know, I'm so sorry, Cole Allen, this is something that was very unsecured, and I did have that thought. Now a lot of people are saying they also had that thought going in. But yeah, all you need is a silly little invite on your phone. It could have been doctored. It could have been from a prior year. It was extremely easy to get to that point. And I don't know if it's naivete. I don't know what the excuse is. But, you know, I was speaking with one person who said, oh, yeah, this can never happen again. Well, this wasn't the first time this has happened. We've known that Iran wants to kill Trump. We've known that there's been attacks on the president's life. This wasn't a first-time incident. This has happened way too many times. And so if somebody had been a lot more coordinated, you know, obviously you look at the terrorist attacks that was in 2001, that was extremely coordinated. Those men were trained. If somebody had wanted to actually put a little money into it, was willing to do what they did on 9/11, it could have been a disaster. It could have been a bloodbath. And Chuck Grassley,
okay,
would have been
Lydia,
the nuclear codes. He essentially was the designated survivor there, the 94-year-old senator.
Great. Yeah, that makes me feel great. Lydia, all right, you're under the table. We all saw that there was filet mignon, lobster, something called opera cake. I don't even know what that is. Do you bring your plate under the table? Do you bring your drink under the table? Are you joking under the, what's it like under the table?
Yeah, so of course I heard the noise, but it didn't register in my mind that it was gunfire, because that's normally not your first inkling when you hear a sound. And then we heard people say, get down, get down. And I will say, the men, and I say this as somebody who's been harassed on the subway, where no men stands and helps me, the men at my table, and I think at every table, were so badass. They made sure all the women were safe. They, one, the gentleman I was next to covered me with his body and said, you know, get down. I felt so safe and protected. And so that was kind of a silver lining. And of course, we saw the photos of Hegseth and Miller protecting their wives. And so that was a really beautiful moment. There were a lot of Daniel Pennies in that auditorium. I didn't think to have my phone at all. And in hindsight, maybe that was good, because a lot of people are getting sort of destroyed online for posting selfie videos. So my first thought as I was under there, I was praying and I kept saying, did they get President Trump, or is he okay? Is he okay? The woman next to me was crying. You know, we weren't under there that long. And then people said, oh, you know, it's safe to get up. And I kind of thought, is it? Like, really? Like, we've seen this level of incompetence. Who's to say there isn't another attacker? Who's to say that wasn't a misdirection and somebody else is coming in? Again, if this had been a smart, coordinated attack, it would have been very easy to get people. So we heard on top of our table, we heard people walking, trying to evacuate various officials. It's funny, there were a lot of CEOs, billionaires, important people in there. No one cared about them. They were just focused on getting, obviously, President Trump, Vance, and then folks in the line of succession. So Bessent and Rubio got out of there right away, and some of the, I guess, lower-ranking cabinet officials, I won't name names, but they were there probably for a good 10 minutes after those folks were evacuated. But it was, the room is jam-packed. You can barely get to your seat. I mean, it took me like 15 minutes to get to my seat, because you're weaving in tables and people are standing, and it's just impossible to get around there. And that's why you had security guards running on top of tables. But again, if there had been a sniper or somebody who really knew what they were doing, it would have been super easy to pick off Hegseth and Miller and some of these folks. And because they did, they had to kind of weasel their way out of this very complicated seating arrangement there. So by the time people were saying it was safe, and thank God it was, and that wasn't some sort of false flag, yes, we were very glad. So we were very glad that we had sprung for the nicer wine, because there's a basic kind of wine package there that they give you. And then if your company is generous enough to pay a little extra, you get some nicer bottles. And people were getting reamed online. There's all these viral photos of a woman drinking out of a wine bottle. We all paid a lot of money for that. And sure as hell, we were going to save that wine. You do not let good wine go to waste. So I think everyone who was thinking straight did grab one of the bottles of wine at their table, some of which, you know, we just opened and we're just starting to drink. You can't let that go to waste, because the food was never served. We only had a burrata salad that had been served. And because it was so early, we didn't have our entrees. We obviously didn't have dessert. We only had a sad little burrata with, I think it had some peas and some pistachios on top. So food was very hard to find. If you can imagine, you couldn't really Uber Eats anything to the Hilton at that point. A lot of things close in DC. So there were a lot of very hungry people trying to find a vending machine. So the wine and the champagne, that was all we had. And I was very grateful for it. And I don't think that we should be attacking people for taking the bottles of wine that they paid for with them as they were forced to leave.
Look, I just want to save myself, so I can't judge anybody else. Lydia, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. We have more. Julio Rosas. He probably would have saved someone else. Not me, though. We're going to talk to him. He's been involved in all these kind of street protest stuff. Before we talk to Julio, let me talk to you about your cell phone. Where are you sending your money? Are you tired of all these street animal protests? I am. Part of defunding them is going to involve you putting your money where your morals are. When you send money to companies like Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, they send that money to communist street groups, and you fund the revolution. Not judging you. I've had all three of those companies. You can switch to PureTalk now. Save money. They're on the exact same towers. Money never goes to communist street animals. It goes to a company that hires Americans. CEO fought for this country in Vietnam. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
He had attended a No Kings protest in California.
No Kings. Yeah.
What did security tell you about what may have been his motives?
The reason you have people like that is you have people doing No Kings. I'm not a king. What I am, if I was a king, I wouldn't be dealing with you.
Okay. No Kings. What's the connection between this street animal, the No Kings protests? What was it like that night on the outside? I think we should probably ask Julio about that, joining me now. You can go read his stuff at Mostly Peaceful Media, my friend Julio Rosas. Julio, the floor is yours. Talk to me about No Kings. Who pays for this stuff? Organizes it? What was it like that night? Go ahead.
Well, it's not surprising that this suspect took part in this, just because if you go to any of these, and I've been to quite a few, especially since Trump's second term, the type of things that he was espousing in his manifesto is just mainstream throughout that entire type of crowd. I mean, these things are well attended. Let's be real. And they all pretty much say the same thing, where like these unhinged conspiracy theories, making these wild accusations, even saying something like, oh, the military strikes in the Caribbean are just targeting innocent fishermen. And it's, no, they're targeting drug runners that are poisoning Americans. And so this is why I've been saying for quite some time, and Jesse, I'm pretty sure I've said on your show too, but it is absolutely astounding to see the left right now once again get so defensive when people on the right say, hey, the left is very violent, and they've been violent for quite some time, especially with Trump being in office twice. I've been able to make an entire career out of reporting on violent leftist events. We just had one in Los Angeles during the recent No Kings protest weekend, where they were throwing chunks of concrete at federal agents. And so this is just normal on that side. You have to remember that people thought that Trump was done after 2021, and they thought he was going to be put in prison for the rest of his life. And not only is he not in prison, but he's back in the White House, and he's carrying out kind of what he promised to do in 2024. So the outrage and the unhinged level within the left today, and again, it's been this way for a while, but especially now, is very concerning. And Saturday night just proved to be another example as to why.
Julio, okay, let's focus on things like the concrete at federal agents and things like that. And where I'm going with this, obviously, is what are we doing domestically to smash these networks? Now, why if one piece of concrete gets thrown, why is everybody not getting a baton across the face in a 10-year prison sentence? What is happening? Why are these people unafraid, Julio?
Well, you have to remember that a lot of times the violent acts are happening in progressive Democrat run jurisdictions, right? So that means potential jury pool that is very sympathetic to the people that do end up getting arrested. We saw that a lot happening in Minneapolis when there was that surge in back in January, where you had just not even just juries, but you just have like this strong support for the people that are acting violent. So you don't even need to be necessarily partaking in the violence to show support, and they provide support in different ways, with the food, with the clothing, with even something as simple as providing money for bailing people out if they happen to get arrested. And so in terms of actions, there's a lot more that needs to be happening at the federal level to take on the networks that are still very active. And that's not to say that nothing has happened from the Trump administration. They are working on it, but it's just they're unafraid because they've been able to get away with lack of consequences for quite some time. Because obviously, again, in these progressive areas, unless they're attacking federal agents, the federal government doesn't necessarily get involved. So it's usually local police, local DAs, and all that. And they're either hamstrung by the progressive policies, or you look at these judges, they just let them off scot-free or give them sweetheart deals so that they can just go right back out and commit acts all over again. And that doesn't even include the regular everyday criminals that take advantage of those sweetheart deals. So We're just in a very bad place nationally when it comes to this. And again, you know, this is something that I've seen for quite some time coming, especially after Trump won the second time. I only knew it was only a matter of time before there was going to be this explosion of violence. And we saw that last year during the anti-ICE riots that took place across the country. And unfortunately, we're seeing it continually to happen with threats against not just President Trump now, but against entire members of his administration.
Julio, this shooter was not some homeless heroin addict, although he may have been on heroin, I don't know. This guy was well-educated, allegedly pretty well off. Can you explain that to people who don't understand how these people's minds work? When you went to Caltech, it's like impossible to get into that school. It's a nerd school.
Yeah, I mean, even outside of the concerns about, you know, higher education being kind of a cesspool for these ideologies to fester, I think really at the end of the day is just the constant outrage cycle that people like this find themselves in. Because and I'm not trying to blame social media, but social media plays a big part, because and we see that, for example, with the consistent anti-ICE, anti-DHS content that is just every day free-flowing. The reason why that's different from, let's say, 2020 with the BLM riots is that, you know, riots weren't happening every day in different places because, you know, George Floyd was a one-time thing. Jacob Blake in Kenosha, that would happen a couple months later. That was another one-time thing. So people could only get outraged and mobilized when a perceived police injustice act happened. Whereas today, when you look at the issue of immigration, especially in that, you know, last year, people are getting these videos that are often wildly misconstrued and wildly taken out of context about, you know, actions that ICE is taking, and they're just getting fed just these videos every single day. And it's a new thing, it's a new case, it's a new city, and so it just builds over and over again, and that's what their algorithm feeds them. And I know, because I keep track of this stuff, and I see even on X and Instagram kind of just the vile commentary that takes place when it comes to that particular issue, right? And that's just that issue, you know, that's just immigration. That doesn't include all the other, you know, things that people get, you know, find, you know, things to get outraged over from the Trump administration. So really, I think at the end of the day, it just shows how they see it in their phones, they see it in the mainstream media with the commentary that's from the mainstream media. And again, like, you're right, this isn't just some recluse loner with just totally unhinged views. Yes, they're unhinged, but they're, again, they're mainstream within the left.
Julio, I had this thought this morning in the shower. Don't judge me for that, but I was in the shower when the thought popped into my head, and I don't know that anyone has an answer to this question, but the communist street animal activism in this country, you have covered this extensively, talked about how it's paid for, it's organized, you're always expanding on this. How much of that money, if you had to put a percentage on it, do you think is foreign money?
I mean, that's hard to calculate, because it's just a simple fact that we don't know how much is even being put in. But I wouldn't be surprised at all, because it doesn't even have to be something nefarious as like all these shell companies or anything like that. But these groups organize and fund themselves openly through Venmo, through PayPal, through any, you know, just, so all they got to do is just put it out there, and people, you know, from anywhere can just donate to that. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's even something as simple as that. But I would hazard a guess to say that it is not an insignificant amount of money, just based on what we know so far in terms of how vast these networks are. But also, I would just say that, again, you don't need to give somebody $50 who's already super enraged about what the Trump administration is doing, because of the reasons that I gave before, with they're just being fed this day in and day out, and they're just kind of just hyping themselves and hyperventilating over it. And that to me is the scary part, because at that point, that could just be anybody, right? Like, anybody can just wake up one day and just be like, all right, well, even that guy, you know, the suspect in his manifesto, because they said, well, you're biracial, like, what are you concerned about, you know, why are you doing this? And he just said, well, I don't see anybody else stepping up to the plate to do this. And so I think that's kind of what happened in that case. He's a guy who had a part-time job at a tutoring center, and he did that for like 6 years after being in Caltech. And so, you know, who knows, maybe he couldn't get a job, or, you know, that he necessarily wanted. So he figured, it's like, well, if I can't make something of myself, I'm going to do this revolutionary act because someone has to do it. That to me is the more pressing concern, and it just shows how the radicalization within the left is totally unchecked, number one, but also number two, it is encouraged. I mean, look at stuff that Hassan Piker, who is this prominent person on the left, and people campaign with him. Mayor Mondavi, appeared during all that. So, and yet that's not viewed as a problem, at least, widespread as a problem from the Democrat Party.
Julio, Semper Fi, my man. I'll talk to you soon. All right. We need to win elections. Our voting is going to matter more and more in the coming years. Scott Pressler is out there doing what he can. Let's see what he's been up to next. Okay, well, midterm elections are coming up. I know there's a lot of hubbub, shootings, standard communist activity. We got all that, but we have a very important election coming up this November. Scott Pressler is out there talking to people all the time, normal people, not hyper-political people like you and I want to know how we're looking. You talk to one person, they say we're going to do great. You talk to the other, they say we're going to get completely wiped out. Joining me now, the founder of Early Vote Action, Scott Pressler. Scott, I hand the floor to you. How are we looking?
Well, Jesse, in 2024, thanks to your help and giving the grassroots an audience and a platform to speak to the American people, we duly elected President Donald J. Trump with the popular vote. And we won everything. We won every single swing state: Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. And here we are with a Republican White House, a Republican Senate, a Republican House, and we have a House that's doing its job with one of the most narrow majorities in American history. Speaker Mike Johnson is doing his job. And the president, even during his State of the Union address, advocated on behalf of the Save America Act, calling it country-saving legislation. And yet, our Senate, despite having a 53-seat majority, is either incapable or unable or unwilling to give the American people what 84% of us demand and expect, which is proof of citizenship and photo voter ID. And so, Jesse, if you said to me, Scott, how are we looking? What's going to happen on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2026? If we do not pass the Save America Act, if we do not give the American people what they duly elected, what they duly voted for, then I think Republicans are going to be obliterated this November. And I see us losing 30 to 40 seats in the House of Representatives. I see us losing Tom Tillis's seat because he's retiring in the seat of North Carolina. That's minus one. I see Dan Sullivan in the state of Alaska having a difficult time. I see Susan Collins in the state of Maine having a difficult time. And any notion that we could flip New Hampshire, Georgia, Michigan, when our Republican Senate majority won't even do the job that we elected them to do, I think that is a foregone conclusion that we will not be flipping any of those swing Senate seats. And so I am here today on your show, and thank you, Jesse, for having me back to give a warning. Republicans, you must give the American people what they voted you to do, or you will lose everything this November.
Is that what voters are telling you they're angry about, Scott? Is it the SAVE Act? Is it the economy? What are they mad about?
Well, President Trump is doing his best to keep his promises, and he even instituted an executive order to provide for election integrity, despite the fact that our Senate will not give us election integrity. And the president has kept his promise on securing the border. I've been down to McAllen, Texas. I have shadowed CBP agents, and I have seen areas that used to have thousands of migrants go down to 60 apprehensions and zero interior border crossings. They are apprehended and they are deported back to their home country. And I see that our president is trying to make life more affordable for working class Americans. But yet, what I hear from the people every single day, Scott, What is the point of having a Republican Congress if when we elect that Republican majority, they fail to wield that power? And so, yes, I do believe that a lack of effort on the part of election integrity and therefore passing the Save America Act is going to be consequential in that Republican voters are going to stay home. And more so, Jesse, I do want to say one thing. I have met with 90 members of the House of Representatives, 90. I have met with members of the United States Senate, Ashley Moody and Rick Scott and Ron Johnson and Senator Lee, who is doing a terrific job, and Coach Tuberville and Senator Dave McCormick out of Pennsylvania. I've worked tirelessly to be a voice and an advocate for the American people and doing it the right way. And yet here we are. We're approaching even the middle of the year. We still haven't passed legislation. The clock is ticking. And so now I am forced to do something that I don't want to do. But Senator Cornyn is facing a May 26th Senate runoff, and we have not gotten the Save America Act. So I will be going, Jesse, to the state of Texas to help elect Ken Paxton as the next senator in the great state of Texas, because we must hold to account Republican officials when they don't do the job that we demand upon them to do and elected them to do. And furthermore, we must hold Senate Majority Leader Thune accountable. And the way that we do that is one by one, peacefully and professionally. We are going to take down every single one of his allies. Give us what we want, or we will take away what you have.
Scott, go get him, brother. I appreciate it. We have Light in the Mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And there's just something wonderful about fishing. Maybe I'm getting old, but kids fishing. I think I have a picture of every fish my sons have ever caught. These videos are just wonderful.
We got one? Come up some, Manny. Get away from the pole, come on. He acting like he got a mom. Come on, son. There you go. Keep on. Oh, hold it up, Manny. Look, hold it up, Manny.
It's made a fisherman for life. I see them all.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.